Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I hope you all had a fantastic week. My name is Patty Walker, and I'm this morning's representative from the church board. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Would you like to spend some time with our new minister? There are in-home small group gatherings planned in our near future on Thursday evenings. So sign up is in the social hall. The Heartland Crop Walk Against Hunger will be Sunday, October 4th at 11:30 a.m., starting at the Church of the Resurrection, located on Highway KE, east of Heartland. Please take a donation envelope from the box in the social hall if you wish to participate or just make a donation. See Jerry Flakus for details. There will be a meeting about the Northwest Earth Institute courses for this fall in the high school classroom after coffee today. Religious education classes start today. Our K through 4 to 2nd grade children will be going outside every week, so parents, please be sure to dress them for the weather. Next week, the high schoolers and middle schoolers will be doing a team building challenge activity. High schoolers and middle schoolers to go directly to the social hall at 10 next week rather than starting in the worship service. And this activity will go on until noon, so please plan accordingly. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. If you are a visitor, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There is a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to any that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church. Or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk with you about that as well. If you are visiting with us with children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to the religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or to remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just outside the doors to my right and across the entryway if there's need for child care during the service. If there are any visitors comfortable introducing themselves, now would be a good time so that we can warmly welcome you.
Hi, I'm Dan. This is my wife, Julie. And we're visiting. We live in Heartland. This is our first time here.
Welcome.
In the announcement, it says that the crop walk collection will be today. That didn't get into the order of service, so could you please build it in? There will be a number of crop walks that you can participate in if you choose throughout the county. Most of them in October, but all of that money goes in the same pot. So the collection today will be for simply the crop walks. 75% of that money stays local within the county. The other 25% goes outside the county.
Okay, thank you, Blake. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. I hope you find this morning's service fulfilling. Our speaker today will be our new minister, Reverend Jane Espenson. And
don't worry, Mother. It'll be all right. And don't worry, Sister. Say your prayers and sleep tight. It'll be fine, friend of mine. It'll be just fine. And lend your voices only to sounds of freedom. No longer lend your strength to that which you wish to be free from. Fill your lives with love and bravery, and you shall lead a life uncommon. I've heard your anguish. I've heard your heart's cry out. We are tired, we are weary, but we're not worn out. Set down your chains till only faith remains. Set down your chains. Lend your voices only to sounds of freedom. No longer lend your strength to that which you wish to be free from. Fill your lives with love and bravery, and we shall lead a life uncommon. There are plenty of people who pray for peace, but if praying were enough, it would have come to be. So let your words enslave no one, and the heavens will hush themselves to hear the voices ring out clear with sounds of freedom. Sounds of freedom. Lend your voices only to sounds of freedom. Now, no longer lend your strength to that which you wish to be free from. Fill your lives with love and bravery, and we shall lead a life uncommon.
You will notice that I am Paul Fackler and not Reverend Jane Espenson. There will be some corrections as we go along in the service today, so we'll make announcements on hymns and things like that as we reach them. Today's opening words: look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. Please join in the order of service in the chalice lighting and congregational response.
There is actually a children's story today, so if the children want to come up, I would love to have you join me in the front here. And Paul is going to hold the book so everybody can see. And this story is called The Star Maiden. Today I'm going to be talking to the adults in the service when you guys go to your RE classes. I'm going to be talking to all of your parents about how it feels sometimes to just be alone and to do things all by yourself, but how much better it is when we do things all together. And this book, The Star Maiden, was actually written by my mother. She wrote this book. So Paul's going to open it up and show you the pictures. Once there was a time long, long ago when all the tribes in the land lived in peace. There were no wars among them. Summer was always in the air. The streams were clear and pure and filled with fish. Birdsong rang from every tree, and the earth was rich with everything the people needed. All day long they hunted and fished. They gathered fruits and nuts, and they made birch bark canoes to carry them lightly along rivers and across the wide lakes. But at night, when work was done, the people loved to watch the sky. They loved to see the silver dusk of the moon climb the darkness. They loved to watch the stars flicker their icy fire. One night, when the sky above the prairie was glittering with starlight, they saw something new. It was the brightest star anyone had ever seen. As they watched, it began to move. It fell almost to earth. Then it stopped. They could see it hanging like a white blaze near the top of a faraway hill. What could this mean? They wondered, and they watched night after night. It never moved from the hilltop. Days went by. At last the great chief spoke. Let some braves go into the far hills. Let them see this thing and let them tell us what it is. So the braves went into the far hills, and when they came back, they said, we saw something shining there. It hung in the top of a dark pine tree. It did not answer us. It made us feel afraid. That very night, one of those young braves had a dream. A silver maiden came into his dream. She shone with silver light. She spoke to him. Her voice was like a thread of silver. She held out her shining arms to him. I'm tired of wandering across the sky, she said. Your world calls to me. I love the blowing winds. I love the colors I see below me. I love your rivers and lakes. I want to dip my hands in the clear water that shines up at me. I have watched your people. I have watched the children playing in the villages and tumbling in the prairie grass. I want to live among you. No more will I wander in the dark sky. Let your wisest people help me. Let them tell me what form I will take. Then I can live on your land forever. The young brave woke up. It was still night. His dream was gone. The silver maiden had vanished too. When he looked at the far-off hills, he saw the shining light hanging in the top of the dark pine tree. And then he fell asleep again. In the morning, the young brave told the chief about his strange dream, and the chief called the wisest men and women together, and they sat in their council circle and listened. The chief stood up. He spoke. A star wants to live on earth, he said. Our people will welcome her. The blue air over the prairie will fill with birdsong to honor her coming. On earth, she cannot be a shining star, so let her choose the form she will take. She can be a flower growing in the earth. She can be a fish swimming in the water. She can be a bird soaring in the clear air. Her home will be where she finds a restful, peaceful place. Go, you must find her and tell her this. The chief and the wise ones stood up and slowly walked around their fire. They sang a song of welcome and threw sweet wood on the flames. The fragrant smoke rose up, up into the morning sky. It was a greeting to the star. The next night, the young brave left the village. He went into the faraway hills where silver light hung in the top of a tree. He looked up and the light floated down to where he stood. It was the silver maiden of his dream. He turned and she followed. She drifted above him, lighting his way through the darkness. And when the young brave came home, the people crept out to see the star maiden. Her soft light hung in the air over their wigwams all night long. Morning came, and the star maiden slipped into the center of a rose that grew on a hillside. The people heard her voice in the air above them. "This shall be my home. In this flower I shall live on earth." But the next day they heard her voice again. "This rose is too far from the village," she said. "I never see the people that I love." So she left the rose and floated down to the wide grassy prairie. Flowers of every color grew there. "I shall live in this prairie," the star maiden said to the wind. She chose a small flower as blue as the sky. "This is where I will stay." But something was wrong. Every day the earth shook and trembled under her. Herds of great buffalo trampled the ground. Their hoofs dug at the earth. "I cannot rest here," she cried out. And that night the people saw her shining light rise into the dark sky above their heads. And they were sad. They were afraid she would leave forever. Their earth did not welcome her at all. She could not find a peaceful home. The star maiden drifted over the lake, and she hung there. Her reflection floated on the dark water. Floating on the water were the reflections of all her sky sisters, too. The people watched. Then they heard her silver voice again. "Sisters, sisters," she called, "stop your wandering. Find rest with me. These quiet waters will be our home. Come." And the people saw the sky shake with glittering points of light. They saw the dark lake come alive with stars. "What does this mean?" they asked. The wise one smiled. The chief smiled too. "Let us go to our beds and sleep now," he said. "Our star maiden has found a home at last." The night wind blew, loons called, owls hooted. When morning came, something was different. Water lilies. They are stars that fell from the deep sky one night long, long ago. If you see them, touch them gently. Their petals shine in the sun like the stars that lived and sparkled in the sky once upon a time. Water lilies, touch them gently and remember. Thank you. This is the time in our service where we collect the offertory, and the ushers will be passing the baskets among you. No, after. Oh, right. Oh, my gosh, gracious me. And this is because I'm a learner here. I'm a new person. So after the children's story, which is not written in your order service, what is also not written is there's a hymn right now. And that is number 358. So you get to stand. Rank by rank, again we stand. Number 358. Thank you.
it is time for the offertory, and this is just a reminder that this offertory will be going to the crop walk. Before we begin the joys and concerns, I just have to say that I think this tradition that this church has of the children of a child leading all of the other children out with a lighted candle is the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. And I think it's really, really a beautiful and symbolic gesture. And I admire this congregation for having come up with this.
As noted in the order of service, this is a sacred time when we invite all to share great joys and concerns and profound sorrows with the congregation. If you choose to share, please raise your hand. When an usher brings you a microphone, please briefly tell us your name and your joy or concern. I will light a candle to represent your joy or concern to be held in our thoughts and prayers.
I invite you now to enter into a moment of silence, meditation, and prayer. May it be so. Please join now in hymn number 318, We Would Be One, and you can remain seated.
Our reading is from Henry David Thoreau, and it's called To Live Deliberately. Why should we live in such a hurry and waste of life? We are determined to be starved before we are hungry. I wish to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life. I wish to learn what life has to teach and not, when I come to die, discover that I have not lived. I do not wish to live what is not life. Living is so dear. Nor do I wish to practice resignation unless it is quite necessary. I wish to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life. I want to cut a broad swath, to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms. If it proves to be mean, then to get the whole and genuine meanness of it and publish its meanness to the world. Or, if it is sublime, to know it by experience and to be able to give a true account of it.
As the new minister to this congregation, I thought it might be useful for you to know who I am from a religious perspective, and what that religious perspective means to me as your minister. Even as a little girl, I sensed a calling to a religious life. The Hogan family lived across the street from us in Duluth, and they were Catholic, and I had many a sleepover with Kathy, and we used to sleep on our sleeping bags in her living room floor. Kathy would always fall asleep before I did, and I would lie awake, my eyes drawn to the quiet golden light that shone over the face of Jesus on the narrow wall to the side of the fireplace. Below Jesus was the Lord's Prayer, and I would read and read the words, bringing them into my mind and into my mouth. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. I thought this was such a beautiful poem, and that it made such good sense. And here's how I interpreted it in my mind. It was a prayer to God or to Jesus, or maybe it was really to Mary, beautiful, beautiful Mary. I always thought the Catholics had it right, worshiping a mother instead of always focusing on the greatness of a man. This was the 1960s, and my feminism was starting very early. Live life on earth as you imagine it must be in heaven. Well, that seemed like a good way to try to live life out, in a beautiful and positive way where everyone was nice to each other. Make sure that no one goes hungry. Well, that seemed like a good thing to wish for, too, making sure there was no poverty or hunger. Don't get upset if people walk on your property. Hope that other people will also be nice if I were to trespass on their property. I thought of our cabin up north and of those no trespassing signs that I wanted to ignore and often did ignore because I wanted some blueberries or wild strawberries or just wanted to row over to a particular small island and have a picnic or a swim. What harm was there in that? Forgive me for this as I would certainly forgive you. So yes, that part of the prayer seemed very important to me and made a lot of sense. I didn't know what temptation was, but I did understand what evil looked like because I had seen enough scary movies, and I definitely wanted to be delivered from any of those kinds of things. So I thought that was a great thing to request of God. And then that last part, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. It was just a great piece of rhythmic poetry, and I loved it. This prayer was also sensible to me because I wanted to become a nun when I grew up. And even though my mother was Jewish, and we didn't go to church, and no one in my family believed in God, I really felt drawn to becoming a nun. Particularly one in France. since I love their soft gray nun outfits versus the severe black ones I saw around town. That soft gray was so much friendlier looking. And I wanted to be in an order where they helped the poor and really made a difference in the world, where they didn't just talk about doing things, but where they were really out there doing things about the suffering of others. I wanted that, and to do it in a foreign language, well, that just added to its appeal. It seemed like the very best way to live out life, being a kind, caring person who helped others. I tried praying at night, but I just couldn't figure out who I was actually praying to, since it seemed to me it was just like wishing for something on your birthday when you blew out the candles. Oh, I wished that I could grow up to be someone who did good things in the world and who cared about others and who would really try to end suffering. And then I would picture not God, but me blowing out all those candles. And then I would say Amen and climb into bed, hopeful that the message had been received. I was also very open to the idea of Jesus sitting on the end of my bed, like I heard he did so often for people who were in prison who had never believed in him before. And then one night there he was, and now they believed. So many of my friends were either Catholic or some kind of Christian that Jesus was with us in our conversations just as much as any other topic. And I felt that if there really was a Jesus, and if he really did exist still, like they said, that as much as I thought it would be actually very scary to have him appear at the end of my bed, that I wanted to be open to it anyway. If it was real, let him appear. I wanted to see him, just like my friends did. He never did appear, not once. Nor did I ever hear the voice of God, although I really, really listened for it for years. I thought it was all such a beautiful concept, and I wanted to experience it too. But then my oldest brother died of cancer when he was 19, and my best friend told me that God had killed my brother because our family didn't believe in God. And at the very moment that she said this, I stopped looking. Would God really have punished my brother with suffering cancer because our family didn't believe in him? That seems so small-minded and cruel. How could anyone worship or adore somebody like that? How was that loving or kind, someone good to pray to? It made no sense to me, and I turned my back on God's possible existence, but my desire for the religious life never waned. I was raised Unitarian in the way most Unitarians are. That is, we never went to church. My mother had been raised Jewish, and my father was Congregational. They weren't joiners, but we children were raised with a high ethical core and a strong moral compass, and they encouraged us to explore every aspect of the world and every type of religion and to see whether we could find our own place, something that fit for us. One day when I was about 31, a friend of mine invited me to go to a UU church. And although I had been to many churches during my lifetime, for some reason I had never been to a UU church. And that first experience was very memorable to me. The service was remarkable in that the Bible was not used, but there was instead a reading from Mark Twain's Letters from Earth. There was no pipe organ, but a small chamber orchestra playing some gorgeous classical piece. The hymns had words I could actually say, rather than just focusing on the melody and not paying attention to the usual Jesus and salvation and God language I was used to singing in other churches. The sermon was called an address, and it was about things that mattered to me, said in a perfectly sensible way with real language and real meaning. I was transfixed. After the service, I gathered up every single solitary brochure that was on the stand in the lobby. What UU say about Jesus, what UU say about the Bible, what UUs believe. I went home and read and read and read, just like I had the Lord's Prayer so long ago. And I committed to memory those seven purposes and principles. This was it. I had finally found my religious home. It all made sense to me with no translations necessary, and it was who I was, who I had always been. Fortunately, that very church was looking for a part-time religious education person, and so I applied and was hired, and within days I became good friends with a student minister there who was a seminary student in Chicago, but she was doing her internship in that church in Minneapolis. I was the mother of three small children, so there was no way I could just pack up and go to a Unitarian seminary. I couldn't go to Chicago or Boston or California to become a UU minister. And I felt that once more, here I was, so close to my dream of starting my religious life, and that once again, it was not going to happen. And then this young minister told me about a UCC, United Church of Christ, seminary that was on the outskirts of the Twin Cities, and how historically the Unitarians used to be part of the Congregational Church. And so maybe I could contact the seminary and see if I could study there. I did. They said yes, and my long journey toward becoming a UU minister began. I was finally on the path of my calling. I was the only UU student in that seminary, and the last time they had had a UU student was 10 years prior. This was not a path paved with jewels. My best friend and sister-in-law, who was a born-again Christian, upon hearing that I was going to study to become a UU minister, told me that she could no longer be my friend. We had raised our children together, and we were inseparable. We had, of course, had many theological discussions over the years, since she was always trying to guide me gently toward Jesus and praying for me. And seriously, I have so many people praying for me that I am a shoo-in to heaven at this point. But nevertheless, we had loved each other and were the same person. And so this sudden break with her was and is one of the most painful parts of my life. That was 20 years ago, and to this day she cannot be my friend because I went public with my UU thoughts when I became a minister. It was one thing, she told me, to be privately thinking the way I did, but to speak from a pulpit was now a dangerous thing, a threat to Christianity, and therefore a threat to the world. When I was a hospital chaplain as part of my seminary studies, I was often requested by patients or by nursing staff to be the chaplain they wished to have in their room or on their unit. My supervisor wrote a review of me once to put in my file, noting that I was requested more than the other chaplains and that he found this concerning. Because there is no way you are able to console and comfort these patients since you do not believe in God. It's not possible, he said. And yet it apparently was possible. Does a person have to believe in God in order to be a decent, kind, caring, compassionate, empathetic person, I asked. His answer was yes. For without God, he maintained, a human is unable to have a morality, unable to determine an ethical path. When I countered my supervisor saying that he must be mistaken about this, since I was actually able to do those things without a belief in God, he leaned over his desk, his face darkened and strained, and he yelled, "So, you think you are God?" And then I leaned forward and said, "Yes. We are all the children of God, created in God's image. Isn't this so? Isn't this what Christianity says? If I am in God's image, would I not be like God, with his love and compassion and moral and ethical compass leading my heart in the right way? Isn't this what we humans are to strive toward?" He ordered me out and put me on review. When I was the consulting minister for the River Falls congregation, I was a part of a local area ministerial association and as such was asked to participate in their annual ecumenical Thanksgiving service. It was to be held in the Catholic Church and I was to be the speaker for the service. The day before the service, we had our usual ministerial meeting, and before the meeting came to a close, the minister leading that day asked us all to stay for a minute because he wanted to talk about something that had come up. The thing that had come up was that some of the ministers had been telling their congregants to boycott the ecumenical service because I would be taking away their Christianity. I was stunned, but yes, it was true. This was their fear. Because I didn't believe in God or believe that Jesus was the Son of God, that whatever it was I was going to be speaking about, which they hadn't asked me to share, would threaten the beliefs of the people listening. I spoke to their fear that they thought I would say anything that would be disrespectful to the beliefs of those who would be coming to the service. I explained Unitarian Universalism to them and our drawing from world religions and our respect for other ways of being in the world. And then I spoke to the fact that they themselves as ministers must be filled with such arrogance, with such a sense of power to think that it is the minister who gives and who can take away a person's beliefs, rather than believing, as Unitarian Universalists do, that each person comes to their own way of believing themselves. The Thanksgiving Day service happened, the place was filled, and many people came up to me afterwards who were members of those other churches and told me that they hadn't felt threatened at all by what I had to say and actually felt that it was a religious service even without the God language and that they would have never believed that to be possible if they hadn't come there themselves. And that maybe having a UU church in town was okay. What I didn't understand then, but saw quickly thereafter, was that UUs in general were suspect, and that humanists in particular were seen as something bad. The word humanist was often stated and underscored with the words cold, intellectual, no heart. And the word spirituality was seen as the preferable one to use, implying something richer and deeper than anything humanism could create. Knowing who I am as a humanist, this definition of humanism seems so foreign, so far removed from who I was and who I knew other humanists to be. And what I thought does the word spirituality actually mean? It's always presented as such an airy-fairy kind of thing, floating and ethereal, so nebulous, so hard to describe or pinpoint, especially without the traditional theological trappings to define it. I've thought a great deal about this word all these years, and I believe it means something that is the direct opposite of floating and ethereal. I think it is what speaks to us and grounds us. Spirituality is the response to something that speaks to your heart, that stirs you to your core, that inspires you to attend to the truth that rests within you. We all have an aha moment at some point or another in our lives, whether we are humanist, agnostic, atheist, Christian, Jew, Buddhist, Muslim. That aha moment is a moment of spiritual awakening and understanding. What we experience as spiritual may be different for each of us, be it religion or music or poetry or the sparkling stars in the heavens that shine over our heads in great bursts of light. It is our response to that thing which speaks to our deepest sense of being. It is a spiritual response. It is a human response. And it is as strong a guiding force for good in the world as any I can think of. As UUs, we must remember to focus on what we have in common, not what among us is different. In this religion, we have the chance to strengthen the bonds between people because we come from a religion that wants to speak the truth about life and death, about love and hate, about happiness and despair, without turning our faces away from the difficulties that lie before us and turning ourselves heavenward for the answers. In this religion, we must look at each human face and be reminded that when one person suffers, we all suffer. When one person goes without food, shelter, or water, we are all going without. When one person cannot take care of themselves or their families, we are all equally burdened and suffering. Our question to ourselves is not when will things improve, but how can we, as a religious institution, affect the changes necessary to ensure that the rights of all people are attended to? Our question to ourselves is how we can come together under one roof, under one sky, under one umbrella of faith, a faith that encourages and challenges us to be the best we can be as humans in this world and do whatever it is that we must do to ensure that everyone's basic needs are being met. Our issues are humanitarian issues. Our goal is for the betterment of the world. Our hopes and dreams are those which provide the best life for each and every person, regardless of age and gender, sexual orientation, or belief. We have a strong voice and a strong heart to offer the world, and our UU faith is the perfect faith within which to get things done. Because a group of people, a presence in the community, a place of religion that is recognizable to the masses, is the best jumping off point for real change to occur. Through this religion of my upbringing, I am reminded to live deliberately and to help create positive change in the world. What do your religious upbringings speak to you to do? I invite you all to stand one by one. Tell us your name and your religious background and what positive piece of that history you bring with you into this UU congregation. As Margaret Mead once said, never doubt that a small group of people can bring about change, for it indeed is the only thing that can. Now be brave. It doesn't have to be lengthy, but we don't all know each other, and we're in this congregation together. So I would just like you to stand and just say, and just... Oh, and stand if you can. If you can't, then that's fine. Kathy.
I had my knee replaced a few weeks ago, but I can stand. Kathy Gorski, I was raised Catholic, and the thing that I treasure from Catholicism is the Sermon on the Mount.
I'm Carrie Duma, and I was raised Catholic also. And I, the thing that was emphasized in my congregation was that God is love, and I truly believe that, and I think that's a common thing we share with a lot of other religions.
Lori Sullivan. The thing I treasure about Judaism was the will to pray through intergenerational, multi-generations, and I found that fascinating as a child. And also the song and the prayer and the hopefulness that's communicated through those.
Hello? Is that working? My name is Judy, and I was raised in a similar background to you, Jewish, with parents who both came over in 1939. So I had a lot of cultural Judaism, but not religious. And I had the big Irish Catholic family down the street, who every now and then I would come home and tell my parents, did we really kill Jesus Christ?
Yeah.
I thought my family did it. But I used to spend time with them in the Catholic Church and every now and then sneak communion. But I was really drawn to the UU, and I think right now my religious statement is U-ish. It's Unitarian, Jewish, Buddhist, Universalist, Humanist. So that's sort of where I am.
My name is Linda. I was raised with a Protestant upbringing, Congregationalist, Methodist, Episcopalian, in a town of Irish Catholics. It taught me separatism. I started coming to UU services about a year ago, and I, like you, have felt like I have come home because it has brought us together in the way in which we are meant to be.
Thank you.
My name is Sally. excuse me. My dad is Jewish, nice Jewish boy from the Bronx. My mom was a nice Irish Catholic girl. And we were raised devout atheists. And I think through that realized that there has to be something more. There has to be a reaching out and a sense of community to others. Mm-hmm. And I find the sacred in that and missed that as a child growing up. And that's what brought me here.
My name is John, and I'm probably in the minority here in that I was raised Unitarian. Mm-hmm. And as a youngster or youth, I actually probably wasn't that interested, and I became an engineer by profession. And then maybe because of that, I felt a gap sort of in my life. Logical thinking doesn't always prevail, I guess. And now I felt when I heard about this church and it was close enough to where it was within reach, prior to that, even raising our kids, we wanted to raise them Unitarian, but it was really not practical because of distances, and this became close enough, unfortunately, after our kids had essentially grown, though, that I was able to join, and I feel, again, like some of you, that it's a place you feel like you belong, and it fits with my humanist views. Most of my friends are Christian, and I respect that, but it's not where my head is.
Hi, my name is Janica, and I was raised a combination of atheist and Quaker, although my mom, being the atheist, didn't really have anything to do with my religious life. Quakers believe that God can be found within each of us, that you don't necessarily have to look out, you look inward to find, and it's very much in line with what you just talked about. Mm-hmm. Also, when I was a kid, my dad... he was a pretty smart guy. He used to let me pick where we would go to church, so we visited a lot of different churches. And, of course, I always liked the really beautiful ones, like the Catholic churches. Mm-hmm. And Quakers were really plain. Anyways, being a Unitarian, like the rest of us, just feels like home to me.
My name is Kim, and I grew up in the Catholic Church. I didn't want to be a nun. I wanted to be a priest. but I think what I did get from the Catholic faith was a very strong sense of social justice, which I find here, too.
My name is Chris. I grew up in the Congregational Church, and one thing I learned growing up was Congregationalists were adventurous because they came over on the Mayflower. And my parents were founding members of the Lake Country Congregational Church over here in Heartland. So that's my background.
My name is Jerry, and my background is that on my mother's side, my great-great-grandparents immigrated from Germany in the 1840s. They were free thinkers, and they immigrated because of religious persecution. However, when I was a kid growing up in Prairie du Sac, my parents sent me to the Presbyterian Church because that was the thing to do. Mm. But my mother remained a member of the Freethinker Society in Sauk City, which I became acquainted to in my high school days. Mm. And my recollection is that the most moral and most ethical people I've known were members of that society.
Mm. My name is Carlin Wagner. I was raised Wisconsin Synod Lutheran, very strict, and the summation of what I got out of that was judgmentalism, and that was pretty much what they were teaching, along with the God is love. And I have chosen to go the other way, and non-judgmentalism is part of my own personal creed and what my basic philosophy in life is, that really what counts is love.
Hi, my name is Barbara Howell, and I was raised a Christian Scientist. So I grew up understanding persecution, but I didn't know that that was happening until I went to Valparaiso University, where I actually met my husband, Paul Fackler, where my third boyfriend, when I said, do you want to know what religion I am? And he said, yes. And I said, a Christian Scientist. He laughed because I thought it was, I was joking, because Christian Scientists are the enemy of Lutherans for some reason. But basically, my whole thing from Christian Science that I grew up with was that everyone is perfect and everyone has potential. And that's something that I've really found in this religion as well. So.
My name is Mike, and I was raised strict Roman Catholic. Believed it all the way up into my young adulthood. And what I really miss, actually, about the Roman Church is the incense and the ritual. I miss the litanies where you repeat something over and over and over again. The religious aura that's created in a incense-filled church with brocade vestments. Of course, I would like the outfits. but just the aura that creates, I really do miss that.
Hi, my name is Terry. I was raised Disciples of Christ, which is under the same umbrella as UCC. The values were community, they were service, they were fellowship, ethical teachings of Jesus versus, I guess, a scripture focus. My favorite hymn was, "They will know we are Christians by our love," which to me, I always spoke to, your actions speak much louder than your religious affiliation.
Hi, my name is Mike. Though I grew up in a Catholic tradition, I was always I'm a lifelong skeptic and doubting on things. So I also grew up on a farm and outdoors a lot, so I'm really into the environment and the way people interact with one another and the psychology behind things. So again, like John, a scientific viewpoint on things. So it just didn't fit with the, you know, dogma in the Catholic Church. So yeah, I liked this church because it's free thinking and we get a wide variety of viewpoints.
I'm Tom, and being Croatian American, I was Catholic. Those are like the same thing. And I was also a childhood atheist, so the tension between those two perspectives stuck with me for a long time. And the thing that I think that I get most out of my background is the branch of Catholicism that's very analytical and has a critical approach to theology.
Hi, my name is Jenny, and this is actually my first time here. I kind of like Jane said, this is really, it's like, wow, I didn't know this religion existed until I checked out the website and I came today. And for me, I grew up, I was Catholic, I was Wisconsin Lutheran, Wisconsin Synod Lutheran, and then I went to college and got a minor in philosophy, and then I was Christian Reformed, and now it's like, with all those different traditions I grew up with, the one thing that sticks with me is just a sense of community that I've always had with that, whatever religion I've been. And gosh, it does feel like this religion is very much home-like, that it is very accepting, and that's something that, you know, you don't get in a lot of religions, and I hope to become part of this community. It seems lovely.
I'm Terry, and unlike Tom, it wasn't the analytical part of Catholicism that drew me. It was more the mysticism, and I love being Dan Brown and unfolding the symbology to find the real truth. But certainly social justice was what really drew me to it. So any place that was doing that, love it here because they do.
I'm Yvonne. I was raised Lutheran in a small town, and it always was hard to know why the Catholics were our enemy when God is love was the message. And you know, I don't think I could say that as a child, but it just was hard to justify. And I forgot how beautiful the Lord's Prayer is, with as considered as a poem, and like many things, we each bring our own meanings to it, and they can change, and so it means something quite different now than it did as a child.
My name is Esther. I grew up in a Catholic church out in the middle of nowhere. Probably nobody knows where Martinsville is except for Yvonne. Turns out my aunt lived next to her mother, I guess. on the same street. Anyway, I'm one of 13 kids, and I have to admit, I went to school, a Catholic school, for 8 years. Went to church every day that I went to school, plus Sundays, so 6 days a week. I went to through eighth grade. And, you know, I rather liked the ritualness of it, and I liked the commandments, and I really tried to do those always, and I still remember most of them. And the one thing that really got me, I guess, was when I heard that when babies are born, they are born with original sin. And I never could figure that one out, and I have to admit I never told anybody in my family about that, never told anybody, never the teachers or anyone. Mm-hmm. But I've always remembered that from first grade on, mm-hmm. that I never believed it, couldn't believe that that could be. And so high school was the first time I ever married, or ever met a non-Catholic even, and I realized that looking at them, hey, they're no different than I am, mm-hmm. any of us, and I guess they weren't hideous or, you know, weren't, you know. Anyway, I met Jerry. I think he thought I was going to turn him down because he didn't really go to church. But anyway, I met him when I was only 19, and the rest is history. We've been mm-hmm. married for 42 years and never, believe it, have ever had an argument about religion. Mm-hmm. So, by the way, I had two sisters who were nuns, but had both quit. And but I also did enjoy the pipe organ. I liked the music and some of that, where everybody sang together.
My name is Rob. I grew up Catholic. I think I was a pretty good Catholic. And it wasn't until adulthood that I started thinking about people of other religions and what's going to happen to them. So I think out of respecting other religions, the UU way of worship is more respectful of those.
Hi, my name is Julie. This is also my first time here, but not my first time to a Unitarian church. Mm-hmm. I also grew up Catholic, went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, Jesuit university. So I consider myself a recovering Catholic. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised I didn't hear anybody else say that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what drew me to Unitarianism was not having anything forced down your throat, because mm-hmm. I felt like I had so much forced. And now my struggle is I have a 13-year-old who I'd like to bring to church with me, and she says, what do I need church for? Mm-hmm. So, and I don't want her to experience religion the way I did. So, got to figure that out.
My name's Lynn. I'm 100% Greek, and I was raised in the Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church in Wauwatosa that was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, who's a Unitarian Universalist, so hence the connection. Your 13-year-old will probably, if she comes, can learn about all the neighboring faiths. That's a great curriculum they're teaching this year, and might even go to the Greek Orthodox Church. But I think I learned that humans create such beauty in this world. The Greek Orthodox Church is beautiful. The music is beautiful. The rituals and hymns, as Mike was speaking about, beautiful.
I'm Betsy, and I'm an ex-Catholic, ex-Episcopalian humanist, and I think some positives that I bring from other religions are a sense of community, like others have said, and a desire for symbolic rituals.
Hello. My name is Susan, and I was baptized Lutheran, confirmed Methodist, married by a minister from the United Church of Christ, recently attended the Catholic Church because my husband is Irish Catholic, had my daughter baptized when she was 8 at the Catholic Church because I wanted her to have something to, you know, learn about something so she could make a decision. And then a friend of hers that comes here invited her to come now for this class with the 13-year-olds to learn about other religions, and I really want her to have some choices. The woman over here had mentioned she had some Quaker background. My sister is Quaker, and so I've done some reading on that, too. Mm-hmm. And that does seem very similar to this, mm-hmm. which I liked. Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Stacy, and I was raised very Lutheran. My family is still very Lutheran. I don't hold a lot of resentment to my religion of past, as I think some people do. But one of the great things I do remember is a lot of discussion. I remember being part of lots of Bible studies, and I remember in our religious education Sunday school really being encouraged to ask questions and talk. And I'll say some of the answers I got are definitely not things I believe in any longer, but I don't ever feel that I was stifled in being able to learn and talk about the religion.
My name is Dan. This is my first time here, as I said earlier, with my wife. And I was raised Catholic, went to Catholic school. I think I made it through it all because I played guitar, so the mass to me was, when do I play again? Then I transferred to a public middle school and started religious ed class at the same church, and the kids were just so mean to me at that time in my life. And it really started to, I'm in this church that we're supposed to love each other, and yet I'm being treated so poorly by the same kids that are in these classes with me. Well, that's not a good time for that to happen, because that's when my brain started to think analytically, and so I struggled through that, and then my dad introduced me to Kurt Vonnegut, and I think the rest is history. He sort of shaped my high school views, and I became a humanist before I knew what that was. And then I think for a long time it was just sort of, someone referred to the forced upon you. I was forced to get confirmed even though I wasn't there. And so in my early adult life, I think it was just sort of like, in some sense, it was kind of a mockery of Catholicism. We had my brother marry us. He got ordained from the Universal Life Church. We didn't baptize our son when he was born. But then it's amazing how when you have a child, all of these underlying values just surface to the top, because you're like, I have to raise this kid. What am I going to teach him? What am I going to teach him about God and how to treat each other? And so we didn't know that Universal Unitarian Churches existed, but looked on the website and we're like, wow, this is all the things that we've sort of been trying to say but didn't know existed. So I think that's what brought us here today, and I hope to keep coming.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I was raised Catholic, so was my wife, and our daughter was baptized in the Catholic Church. And we had a really strong sense of community in our church. But we were really drawn to the seven principles that we read on the website, and we thought that would be a really good path for our daughter and ourselves.
Well, thank you. And on that note, I will do one more.
Thanks. Go ahead. We have time. Okay. My name is Dana, and I was raised with parents who weren't really believing of anything, but I had this great uncle who's a Lutheran minister. And one thing he told me that I still find true, what I like about this church is that there's complexity, that there's not just black and white. And I feel like a lot of religions try to show you that there's black and there's white, but there's no gray. And I like the gray that we have here, which reminds me of your story with the nun soft gray robes.
I know. Yeah. It's beautiful.
It's a nice connection.
I'm telling you. Okay, well, thank you. I don't want to run too much over because the children get released. But let's just do the first verse of the hymn, number 295, Sing Out Praises for the Journey.
Thank you. Be doers of the word and not merely hearers. Those who look into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and persevere, be not hearers who forget, but doers who act. They will be blessed in their doing. Go in peace.
I'm actually thinking I'm going to be helping John with his problem.